ChatGPT, TikTok. Are these just marketing buzzwords and passing trends, or can they positively impact the way you run your business? This week's guest, John Jantz, founder of Duct Tape Marketing, talks with Gail Dobie about how these technologies are changing how customers interact with companies and how you can get the most out of these powerful tools to become more efficient and increase your reach.
John, I am so delighted to have you on the podcast. We were so thrilled to have you at our boardroom retreat about 6 months ago. Everybody loved your content, and I thought it would be so great to have a follow-up and talk a little bit about some of the books that you have.
Sure.
So anyway, which one do you think our listeners should listen to first out of all the ones that you've written?
Well, certainly the one I'm known most for is my first book, Duct Tape Marketing. It's the name of my company, the name of my podcast. So a lot of people are certainly recognize that name. In a lot of ways, my last book, The Ultimate Marketing Engine, was a bit of an update, if you will. Actually, it's the same publisher that published Duct Tape Marketing, and they didn't want me to write a revised edition. They wanted a new title. And so, frankly, over about a 15-year period, a lot has changed. So in a lot of ways, it's the most updated. But still today, Duct Tape Marketing sells quite well, and people tell me all the time that they still find that very foundational in terms of how to think strategically about marketing.
Well, The Ultimate Marketing Machine, I've read it twice and I've taken notes on it. So when I take the time to write notes, it means it was a really good book.
Glad to hear that.
Yeah, actually, we have implemented a lot of what we've read in that book as a result of it. So I thank you for that. And I'm sure that was part of the content you delivered for our boardroom group.
That's right.
And they really enjoyed that. So I highly recommend putting that on your reading list. So you mentioned that marketing has changed a lot over the last 10 years. And let's talk about some of those things that you've seen that have made radical changes to how small businesses market.
Well, a lot of it's kind of technology and platform change, but that a lot of people would recognize, right? I mean, social media, things like that are kind of new in the last 10, 15 years, and they've become, pretty standard fare. They're just marketing, tools and platforms today. Really, the thing that I tell people, a lot of people fixate on those kinds of changes, but really what's changed the most in the last 15 years is the customer's ability to buy or choose to buy, how they buy, who they buy from, how they research the companies they buy from. And I think a lot of people underestimate that's what we have to be reacting to rather than saying, oh, do I need to be on TikTok or whatever the, platform of the day, might be. It's understanding the behavior that buyers have that has really changed in terms of how they do research, how they build trust, how they want to actually see a transaction happen today. And what they expect in terms of speed and convenience and things of that nature, that's really where marketing has moved. If there's going to be a change, I mean, fundamentally, what we're here to do as marketers, get somebody to know us enough and trust us enough to want to give us their money, to provide a service. I mean, that hasn't changed since the dawn of time, and really, it's just reacting to how business is done today is probably the thing that we need to pay more attention to, rather than getting really fixated on the technologies.
Okay, and you mentioned that there were several changes in the client behavior these days, and I think that would be worth diving into that a little bit and talk about some of the things you're seeing.
Sure. Well, today it's become very standard. We all have a very robust or should have a very robust online presence that can be accessed in a lot of places, including places we have no control over, like Google reviews, right? Where people can leave, perfect strangers can leave reviews, good and bad, about our products and services and experience. And a buyer today will put a lot of stock in that, even though they may not know anything about the person who left that review. They put a lot of stock in that. And that type of research behavior, before they pick up a phone or before they ask for a sales, call, they go very deep and can go very deep and find out a lot about a company, maybe eliminate a company before the company even knows that they were a prospect. So I think that's probably the biggest thing you know, a lot of our decision making now is done a consumer or buyer's decision making about who they might actually contact even is done without our knowledge. You know, they haven't asked for a sales presentation or haven't filled out a form or done anything. And maybe they've made a decision about us good for good or bad.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's true because I've noticed that just in the last 6 months, we've seen a lot more organic traffic that's coming to us where people reach out and they want a phone call. And I found that really interesting. And I think it really coincides with how many Google reviews we have now. And I think there is some very big part of that is due to that very one thing.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be nail salon or restaurant, you know, I mean, they lived and died, right, by reviews, good and bad. But it's pretty much across the board now. People expect to find that. So it's kind of social proof. Like if you don't have it, it's like, what's wrong? So it's kind of social proof. It's, let's face it, it's an organic ranking factor, whether people realize it or not, in terms of the search engines. That's one of them anyway. So it certainly is an avenue that regardless of what industry you're in, you know, Google reviews are, or third-party reviews in general, are important.
That's so true. Well, now I want to talk about something that you just talked about. I think you were on your own podcast talking about AI.
Sure.
And this is a fairly big topic, and I'm seeing so much conversation about it. In fact, I was just reading an article this morning about the fact that Venus Williams has an interior design firm, and she's developing an AI tool for design. I thought, oh my gosh, this is crazy. There are so many people that are diving into this industry that didn't get trained in it, and now they're coming in and they're using this tool. So first, let's talk about AI. What is it and why should we be thinking about it?
Yeah, well, that, you know, we're probably going to take up, if I give you the entire definition, we'll take up the rest of the show. But I mean, AI stands for artificial intelligence. So the implication there is that this is a machine, if you will, that is, you know, thinking for us. I mean, I think that's probably the basic understanding that people have. But what it really is these large learning models that are able to have, you know, tens of thousands of high output processing chips that can, you know, digest in a moment time, you know, any kind of request and really synthesize what's out there in the world or what's out there that they've been trained on and be able to make a guess or prediction about, you know, what we're looking for as an answer. So that's kind of the somewhat geeky, you know, technical definition of it. But what many people have seen, particularly if they're not, you know, in the industry, you know, almost everybody's heard of or used or heard somebody talk about ChatGPT. That's probably the most consumer-friendly interface. You know, it looks a little bit like a Google search bar. You go there and you put in a what's called a prompt. You basically can give it any kind of set of instructions and it will give you the output it thinks you're looking for. So, you know, a typical search might be, you know, graphic or interior designer near me, right? I mean, I'm looking for an interior designer. You know, it would give me what, you know, websites or you know, maps listings of some folks near me. But a typical prompt might be, you know, I'm going on an Italian vacation with, you know, my grandmother and my grandson, and we're going to be in these cities for 5 days, and we want to do some outdoor things, some art things, and eat at the best restaurants. And it will literally, you know, give you an entire itinerary of, you know, the best places to see, all the way down to like, you know, at 2 o'clock on, you know, this day, go here. I mean, so the output is much more robust and it is based on what it thinks you want rather than what maybe the search engines are incentivized to do, which is to show you their advertisers and to show you, you know, the things that have been optimized, you know, to be shown in search.
I love that. You just gave me a great idea because I was just thinking about our trip to Portugal. I said, you know, we need to start researching that and figuring out all the details. Now I know I'm going to use ChatGPT. Thank you for that.
Well, I'll give you a couple of recommendations. I was just there in last November as well. It's a lovely country.
Oh, I love that. I cannot wait to go. All right. So obviously, there is a reason to pay attention to AI today. And it sounds as if one of the great places to start is just research for one, but second of all, marketing. And of course, your marketing, that's your thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to impact. It actually has been. You know, there's been a lot of buzz about it the last year, but it's actually been baked in. I mean, Siri uses AI. Sure. You know, Google Maps, when you're trying to find a location, uses AI. Have you ever gotten that alert that says it's a faster route to go this way now? Yes. Well, that was AI, you know, taking in all this data and making predictions about, you know, how you'd get to your place faster. So we've been using it for years, whether we knew it or not. But the models have just gotten to the point where they are much more user-friendly to really have an interface that anybody can use. Now, it's going to impact and is impacting every aspect of business. It's going to not only impact words, but you know, images, video. I mean, there are going to be some tools pretty soon that you can feed in a script and it will produce a feature-length movie for you. Gosh. I know some of your listeners are probably familiar with Tyler Perry. You know, he was building, you know, Madeira, right? And produces a lot of movies himself. And he was building an $80 million studio in Atlanta and he put a halt on it because the AI technology is going to do a great deal of what we used to use studios for. So you imagine that kind of disruption at that level. So, you know, you think about marketing of a small and mid-sized business, you know, producing content, producing, you know, video content, producing podcasts, repurposing content, doing research on content, or doing research just on entire industries, you know, is how this tool is being used every day and is going to be continued to be used every day. In the interior design business, as you mentioned, you know, there have been some actual pro tools, as you're well aware, out there that you could take a piece of furniture from somebody's design showroom and put it inside somebody's living room and they would see exactly what that would look like. But those were kind of pro tools. I mean, you had to really be in the industry. Today, you know, it's going to be such that anybody, you know, anywhere that has an internet connection is going to be able to do that same thing for themselves. And not only that, is going to be able to say, give me a look that is mid-century. You can tell I'm not a designer.
You're doing great. There is mid-century modern.
mid-century modern with a hipster flair, you know, whatever you want to throw at it. And it's going to actually be able to do that to some degree. Now, a lot of your listeners would argue whether or not it would be something they would do or look anything like a professional would do. But the perception is I can do that without. And so, you know, it's obviously, and this is one small example of one industry. So imagine pretty much every industry, the disruption that's going to be caused.
It's mind-boggling. It is absolutely mind-boggling. So let's do a little deep dive into maybe repurposing content. So let's say we take this podcast, we get a transcript of it. What could we do with that with ChatGPT?
Yeah, that's actually one of the best uses currently. The AI models, in my view, are not very good at producing original content. I mean, they basically are taking, it's not regurgitated, but they're basically taking, you know, all the content that's been out there, good or bad, and then producing some pretty generic content. If you just go to it and say, give me a blog post of 700 words about X. You know, you're going to get 700 words about X, but it's going to be, you know, it's not going to be award-winning. Let's put it that way. And so what we do typically with it today is if you have good original content. So in other words, the transcript of this or just even a video you've recorded where it's in your voice, your style, your tone, it's your point of view, you know, it's your advice. So, you know, you at least believe that that's, you know, high quality content that helps differentiate you. And of course, you know, speaks the way that you speak. Well, taking that transcript then and taking it to, you know, many of the, you know, we use Claude as certainly another AI tool as well as ChatGPT. So taking that transcript to many of the tools and asking it to create content for LinkedIn, for a video script, or for a, you know, an actual podcast, for, you know, 20 X, you know, posts or Twitter posts. It's very good at actually taking good content and repurposing it. it's very good at taking, you know, 30, 40 minutes of video and saying, okay, I understand your style now. It's pretty good at taking more highly technical things that have been described by an expert and then saying, okay, I get the level at which we need to be, you know, diving into this topic, because it can then go out there and access all the research that, say, has been done, you know, on a very specific topic, as long as you can inform it. And so we find the best way to do it is produce. I'm big video first. I mean, so we tell everybody, produce video first, get your transcript. That gives, you know, that does all the training that the GPT needs. And it, you can then say, you know, produce it in, you know, 100 different ways for 100 different types of formats. And it will do a very good job of that. Mm-hmm. So in terms of volume, once you have good original content, it's an incredible efficiency tool today.
Well, that's exciting. I love that.
Yeah.
Our team will be working on that very soon. All right. So how about for our interior designers? What are 5 suggestions of where to start with AI?
Well, I mean, the first is just, it's changing so fast. You know, the first is to find a way to, you know, whether it's Google puts out, you know, their things, or OpenAI, which is ChatGPT. I mean, they're always, you know, subscribe to their newsletters, their, you know, their blog posts, because they're always talking about what's next and what's new. You don't, you know, have to be on the cutting edge of everything, but you all ought to at least understand how people are talking about it and using it. And, you know, a lot of, for good or bad, you know, informed or not informed, your customers are going to start asking you about it because, sure, you know, they're hearing about it every day. So you certainly can't bury your head in the sand, even if you'd like to. You know, it's not going away. So number one is get informed. Number two is just start playing with it. It is a tremendous, you know, I jokingly, when AI first started becoming, you know, very useful, you know, it's still not really artificial intelligence. it's not thinking for us. It can't add context. It will never understand the human condition as you do. And so start playing with it and understand its limitations, but also understand what an incredible assistant it can certainly be. You know, a lot of times people have trouble getting started, say writing, you know, a piece of content, right? So you go to it and you want to write something about, you know, the style of, you know, certain sofas or the style of certain chairs and where they fit and don't fit. Well, just ask it and it'll give you an outline. And then you might say, oh, I hadn't thought about that idea, you know, or here's a good structure, you know, for me to write around. And now I'll put myself, you know, into that structure, but I've just got a head start. You know, and certainly, you know, things like, I'm going to get really geeky here, but from an SEO standpoint, things like metadata, which is, you know, titles and descriptions. Well, that's work that it actually can probably do better than you, you know, because it's going to actually automatically format it the way it knows that Google wants to see it if you tell it that's what you're looking for. So there's a lot of things that, you know, think about it as hiring an intern and that, you know, doesn't know much about the business, you know, or your industry, but can take great instruction and come back to you with a lot of, you know, really good resources and research that'll help you do your job faster and smarter.
Okay, great. Well, what are some of the caveats about AI?
Well, it lies. It makes things up. you know, it's very, very, they actually call it hallucinating. The AI hallucinates, and it will actually give you statistics and data from a made up research. They still can't really understand why it does that. but you certainly can't take anything that it says and say, okay, you know, without sort of confirming what it does. It says, it is not, grammatically, it is a bit of a mess, uses passive voice all the time, run on sentences, you know, all the time. So, you know, anytime you produce a piece of content, you know, even if you've informed it, I mean, you've given it, you know, content and say, you know, write a blog post based on this video or something, you still are maybe 75% there. So there's a lot of editing, a lot of checking, a lot of putting context in it. There is a growing buzz around the idea that some of the search engines are very aware of what content is produced by AI. It's very easy for them to detect content written by AI, and they don't want people just producing content using these tools. And so there's a whole tool set of tools created for AI detection that give you then that can then give you advice on how to actually make it more human-like. So those are a couple things that are going to be out there. I know this, you didn't ask me this, but as a side note, I can't imagine being a teacher right now because of and I think a lot of industries, initially there was this sort of gut reaction of, it's bad, don't use it. That's cheating. Now I think a lot of industries are going, oh, wait a minute. It actually does some things really well that we don't need to do. We don't need to have to be able to do all the research. We just need to know how to find the answers. we don't need to have the answers. And so I think a lot of industries will come to terms with that when they see that it can be used for good. There's certainly all kinds of warnings out there because the media loves fear. It's fear sells papers, right? Or whatever medium. And so you're certainly going to hear a lot about all the evil things that it can do and the fake things. We're going to go we're going to go through a presidential election in the next 6 months. And, there's all kinds of fear about the misinformation that is easy to produce, the fake types of things. And that's just going to be, like a lot of technology. I mean, the automobile probably had the same, people saying the same thing, about it. And we learned to live with it and understand it. And, maybe there's some regulation, who knows? But it's not going away. So you've got to figure out how to live with it.
Well, it is definitely something to jump into. And I think for most of us, we have to be on the edge of it and maybe tiptoe around for a little bit and then finally dive in.
Right.
But I am very, very interested in how it can simplify and help with so many things within the business. So what if designers don't jump on board with AI? What happens to their business?
Well, I think here's what I always tell people is AI is not going to replace you. Somebody as good as you using AI is going to replace you. And that's really the way we have to look at it is I think it creates the separation between somebody who is very good and experienced and talented from somebody who's just using a tool. And so if you are experienced and talented and you're using a tool to be more efficient, to give your client, 6 designs, to give your client the designs in 18 colors because you can now, but still it's you bringing the context and it's you bringing the retreat, feel that they were after, to their design. That's in a lot of ways, that's going to allow you to actually really separate yourself from the people that are just using tools.
Okay, great. Well, we shouldn't be scared of it. It's just something new to learn. Just another piece of software. All right.
In many ways, yes.
Well, let's talk about CMOs. And let's define what a CMO is. And it's a little bit of a shift from AI, but I wanted to bring this up because I know your firm does fractional CMO work.
That's right.
And one of the areas of pain point for a lot of designers is having a marketing machine in place because you need a marketing machine to be able to get the content out there so you can get the clients, right?
Yeah, right.
So talk to me about what a CMO is and why they should have one.
So the letters stand for Chief Marketing Officer. Mm-hmm. If you think about the traditional kind of C-suite of an organization, the CEO, the CFO, the various positions that are filled at the highest leadership level. Most of the folks listening here don't need a CMO. I mean, that is, if you've got $50 million in revenue and a team of, 25 to 100 people or something, maybe you start really needing those full-time positions. But every firm has a chief marketing officer function. In other words, they need strategic thinking. They need a strategic plan. They need somebody who is advocating for, you know, marketing, you know, identifying the ideal customer, making sure that we're differentiating our business. So those are the types of things that a CMO might do. Now, they might also say, okay, you know, this quarter, you know, here are our metrics, here are our goals, you know, are we on track? I mean, that's the person that's kind of advocating for marketing's role. What we do is really more of a fractional approach. In other words, recognizing that people have that function, but they don't need, you know, a $300,000 salary, you know, sitting at a desk every day, but they do need somebody that is thinking about their marketing strategically, that is helping them plan, helping them know what not to do, helping them, you know, obviously know what to do. And then maybe orchestrating the various parts. You know, a lot of your listeners probably have hired a web designer or maybe an SEO person or a freelancer to do some content. And those are all great. But what typically happens is there's nobody that is really orchestrating, you know, the impact of what they're all doing. And are they doing it together? And are they doing the same things? And do they have the same goals? So a lot of the role that we play is kind of a third party outside who comes in and really, you know, advocates for marketing with the CEO or the president. And in some cases, you know, we happen to provide services to do all the work as well. But in many cases, we're just acting as an advisor, holding them accountable to what they said their goals were, but then also orchestrating the various parts and how they need to go together and how they need to be really integrated.
Okay. And I think that, and certainly some of the conversations I've had with some of our firms that are growing is that they don't know when to hire somebody.
Sure.
So a CMO sounds scary because it sounds expensive. And when do you hire that person?
Yeah. So as I said, you know, that's what the beauty of the fractional is. You're not really hiring. It's really more that you are asking to have somebody come and really have a strategic role in marketing in your organization. It might be an hour a month. Quite frankly, that you're able to get that advisory, you know, type of service. But it's somebody who then is helping you with the whole plan and then hopefully, you know, helping you orchestrate the whole plan. So that's something that, you know, we have companies that have just passed the $1 million mark, you know, for example, and, you know, which is a great accomplishment, but in the, you know, big scheme of things is a small business still, but they still have the need for, if they want to grow, if they have, you know, big goals, they still have that need for at least some part-time marketing. You might even, if CMO sounds too scary, just call it marketing manager. You know, even they need somebody that is taking, that has the experience and also kind of has the framework to take a very strategic view of what they're doing. So the beauty of the fractional type of approach is it can be very much part-time. There's no, you know, benefits that go with it. You can actually end the engagement, you know, very simply. And so it's in some cases, you might even look at it as a project. I'll have somebody come in and, you know, really help me get organized on what we should be doing. And, you know, maybe even if you've got team, that'll, you know, you'll help them understand what they should be focused on and give them some direction. And then you're gone. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, instead of just buying tactic after tactic, which is what many people do, and then wondering what's working or wonder why it's not working, you know, taking this, you know, stepping back and taking this approach of here's where we are, you know, here's where we want to go, here's how we're going to get there, is just, you know, it's just smart business to really take that look or bring in, you know, that person who can give you an outside view and also give you a view that maybe has been informed by working with, you know, hundreds of other businesses that have had the same, you know, challenges that you're having.
Okay. So what are three takeaways you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Well, based on what we've talked about, this is one I share with everyone. You know, if you're not actually tuned in and speaking with your customers, let's say you've grown to a certain level where, you know, there's sales team or there's account managers. If you're not taking the time, you know, as you know, even if you've hired somebody to do this, if you're not taking the time to listen to and talk to on a very consistent basis, your customers, ask them what their thinking, feeling, you know, fearing out there. You know, you, it's very easy to lose touch with, you know, how people are feeling or how people are choosing to buy a service like yours. So I always tell people, 4 or 5 customers a year, you should sit down with the whole, with the intent of really kind of understanding the value that you bring to them, what they're not getting, you know, out there in the world. Just it's research that you just need to get in the habit of doing. We already touched on AI. You know, I would certainly throw that out there is just, if you're not, you don't have to fully embrace it and go all in on it. But if you're not at least paying attention and learning, you know, about what it could do for your business, because there are many, many aspects of your business that it could really impact. I mean, you know, we use it. You know, we constantly run ads for clients, and you know, the key to an ad is having a successful headline and a successful, you know, call to action. Quite frankly, half the time we're guessing at what's going to actually have the most impact, because we're always testing, we're always blown away by the fact that the one that we didn't think was the real winner, you know, was the one that everybody, you know, voted on by clicking on, right? And so, you know, tools like AI allow us to create 200 versions, you know, very quickly and still do that testing. So, you know, it will impact, you know, not just what we talked about today, it'll impact really every, you know, every aspect of business and every aspect of training and every aspect of hiring, you know, that go into a business.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, John. It's always a pleasure. You're just so much fun. And I always learn something every time I talk to you. So I appreciate you very much being on the podcast.
You bet. My pleasure.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, John, for joining Gail on the podcast. Hopefully, John's insights helped ease your concerns around the changing technological landscape. These tools are not as intimidating as they may seem, nor will they necessarily put you out of a job. But they can help you become more efficient if you use them properly. We also have a training call for our Easy Budget Calculator happening tomorrow, April 24th, so this is your final chance to register. Both the tool and the training are completely free. To register, visit thepearlcollective.com/aprilcalculator. If you've struggled with creating an accurate budget for your design projects, this tool is exactly what you need. Invest an hour in learning to use it to its full capabilities.